And welcome to a Saturday night. It's Open Mind, and I am Bill Jenkins. And my purpose is to fill your mind with new things and strange things, but real things that may be a part of a world that you don't even know that exists around you. We're here to open your mind, expand it, give it a whole new dimension. So come on in to Open Mind on this Saturday night. And to help you do that is an old, old friend of mine. And an encore appearance on Open Mind tonight. Greta Woodrow. Greta, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Bill. It's so nice to come back to Open Mind.
Oh, I am so glad that you are here. Here it is. I know it's midnight and beyond there on the East Coast where you are. I want to thank you very much for you and our good scribe.
That's right. Dick
our good scribe.
Right here. Hello, Bill.
Hello. Dick Smullo is right there with us. For those of you who don't know about Greta and Dick, let me give you just a little background. They first got my attention years ago. She wrote a book called On a Slide of Light. And in the book is one of the most fascinating stories that I have ever read in my life. I think what brought it to my attention was the fact that there was some strange things going on the moon. And I always wanted confirmation for that at that time. So I reached Greta and had this marvelous, marvelous experience with this marvelous lady. She and her husband both were very successful business people. Well, they still are very, very successful. Greta has always had some psychic ability. And the psychic ability became more and more and more a part of her life. But she didn't really understand it. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong along the way here, Greta, would you?
I will.
As I tell this story. And things began to happen. Things of unusual nature to a person who is not really in tune. You know, an establishment person who is not in tune with the fact that the establishment is not where it is. And finally, it got to the point where you had to go up and see Dr. Baharich. Andrea Baharich, right?
Right.
And with our good friend Andrea, you got into the Faraday cages, you did all kinds of things, and you indeed were having a number of psychic experiences. The most impressive psychic experience that Greta, that you had, was that you were began to channel. You would call it a trance channeling, right?
Well, no, it was not trans-channeling. It was straight channeling from the Faraday cage. I'm a sensitive, Bill, and I guess what that means is that I'm just a little more sensitive than most.
Yes.
To the frequencies that bombard all of us all of the time. And from that sensitivity came the channeling and the introduction to a group from another time and space. And that, of course, was the Ogata group.
Now, when I'm talking about trance channeling, you weren't aware of what you were saying.
Only once was that so, and that was in the actual cage, during which time Andrea put me under hypnosis, the one and only time that I was under. That was the first experience in so-called trance channeling, if that's what you wish to call it. But from that experience onward, I was always aware.
Are you aware today, whenever you were in...
Oh, yes.
Are you aware of what you're saying, then?
Absolutely.
Then what is the scribe doing around there? He used to take notes.
Well, you have to understand what I mean when I talk about being a channel, a vehicle. I provide the facility, if you will, through which other beings from other parts of the universe can communicate. That's difficult, but not occult, to come to grips with. But... the concept has to be understood that one has a life force or mind or soul separate and apart from the physical body. Dick protects that physical body when I am out of it and another entity is in possession of the vehicle.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, you and I are both saying the same thing. You just say it a lot better than I do, that's all.
Bill, essentially you're dealing with energies, and any time you can give a boost to an energy, add another generator or add a cord to plug into an additional outlet, the energies flow more freely, and I think that that's where I serve more of a purpose than as a scribe today.
Hey, you know, I wasn't trying to put you down, Dick.
It's quite different, you know, Bill, today than it was even a year ago when I was on Open Mind. I have given the Elgata Group complete access to this vehicle, and therefore, I am aware most of the time of what is happening when they use this vehicle. It's quite different than it was a year or two or 7 years ago.
All right, now let me back up just a little bit, Greta. We're using some terms. Let's assume that the people who are with us tonight had not heard you before.
All right.
They don't know what the Ogatans are. I want you to stay on board, those of you out there who have, you know, tumbled into us for the first time or have been with us for a while, but you haven't talked to Greta yet. And we will tell you about the Ogatans, and they are very, very important entities in your life, I think.
Yes.
Now, but to give a little more background, I had read the book On a Slide of Light. The book was published by, as I recall, Macmillan, is that
yes.
right?
Yes.
And it was it's a marvelous book. And I have a little stack of books, Greta, in my library, and there's a shelf up there reserved for the ones that have been the most instrumental in shaping the way I think and the way I am and Open Mind and just everything about me. And right up there is On a Slide of Light.
Ah, you're so nice to say that, Bill.
I have bought about 12 copies, and they always keep disappearing every time I have visitors over to the house. I have the biggest, freest library in the world, I guess.
You're wonderful.
But I always find another one. And one of the bookstores in town, Greta, I thought you would be delighted about this, called me yesterday or day before and said that they had found a number of the books and they now have them in stock. The hardbacks.
Well, that's wonderful. We have paperbacks out now through New Age Press. And if they can't find them there, why, they can always write to Star.
We'll get into all of that.
Good.
I want to tell one of the most fascinating stories, if I may.
Please.
Let me tell you about Greta Woodrue and Dick Smolo for just a little bit. And this goes back, three or four years?
At least.
At least that. When I first heard about you, and I wanted to meet you, and I wanted to introduce On a Slide of Light to this audience, and I wanted to introduce them to the Ogatans, and I want to introduce them to a person that has amazing abilities, as they had been related to me. And that both of you were very kind, and you flew out here to be on the radio show with us. I had never met you, we had lunch one day, as I recall, in a little Italian restaurant up in Brentwood.
Yes, we did.
And I didn't know you from Adam, and you didn't know me from Adam, and we met, and we sat down in that nice little Italian restaurant, and it was wonderful. And got to know each other, and you asked me to put my hands over a spoon that was there. Now, at that restaurant, they have these very heavy-duty kind of spoons, as I recall. And I said, okay, and I put my hand over the spoon, and you put your hand on top of mine, and you said, tell the spoon to bend. Now, Greta, I looked at you funny, probably. And I said, okay, spoon, bend. And you took your hand off my hand. And I took my hand off of the spoon. And the spoon was bending. And it continued to bend. And at the neck of the spoon where it was bending, smoke was coming from it. And I felt of it, and it was cold. And do you recall the two waiters that were sitting there watching?
Yes, I remember their eyeballs almost fell out.
They almost fell out.
Well, you know, metal bending is an attention getter, Bill. Nothing more, nothing less.
Well, you did a lot of attention getters. May I go on with a little
sure.
bit? Because I still have the spoons, by the way. They have not taken them away. They are prominently displayed, and I love to tell the story at my home. So That was impressive. I had never seen that happen before, that the spoon just bent marvelously, and I just watched it bend, you know, and you weren't touching it, and I wasn't touching it. It was just bending away. And then you told me something very interesting, and you gave me a term that I had never heard before. He says, if you can get your mind into the earth resonance, which is, what, 7.85?
7.83 hertz.
Or 83 hertz. You can do strange things. And you looked up at a vase of flowers that was sitting on the table there and motioned to them, and they almost jumped out of the vase and all over the table. Just nearly. But you stopped it before they did that. You really had my attention.
Neat, but not gaudy, Bill.
No, it was very good. It was very impressive, but you had one more thing to show me before we really got down to brass tacks that day. And Dick did this. You remember, Dick? You said that on the way in, Greta had gone into trance again, and she had come up with a word. Do you remember, Dick?
Mm-hmm. I certainly do.
And I gave you my pin, and I think we got a piece of paper from the waiter. And you wrote the word on the paper that the waiter gave you with my pin. And I remember the word. I'll never forget it. It was Lahura. And you asked me if I knew what it meant. Because you were aware that I was having an experience myself in direct communication. And I looked at the word that you had given me, that you had written with my pen and with the paper that the waiter had given you. And it came to me that that word meant exuberant greeting, Lahura. And I think I was correct on that, right?
Yes, you were. Absolutely correct.
And when I opened up the piece of paper to look at the word again, that was written with my pen, on a piece of paper that was given by the waiter. It was gone.
Gone.
It was not there. There wasn't even an indentation on the paper where the pen had written it. So, Greta and Dick, you got my attention.
Bill, those are games that the more technically advanced can play.
Yes. One more game. Later, you were at my home. And I had told my lovely wife, Evelyn, about these things, and she does sometimes, she's not with me to experience some of these things, but you were there. And so you asked Evelyn, as I recall, Greta, to hold a bunch of spoons in her hands like we would play the old Chinese chopsticks games, right?
That's right.
And you told her to tell one to bend. And so, as you know, Evelyn is a non-believer. Well, she was at that time. She's coming around slowly. But she's coming around. And so she did that, and she dropped the spoons, and sure enough, one was bending like crazy there, right?
That's right.
And we went on with the evening. It sort of just happenstance. And as I recall, a little later in the evening, the spoon that was bent was sitting on the bar, and there it was, all bent. And you didn't like it bent that much, Greta, and you just looked at it and motioned with your fingers, and it bent to the left also. Because that one we have also framed. And you just looked at it, and with your fingers, it went to the left. How did you do that?
Well, I guess you have to call it mind over matter, Bill.
You got our undivided attention. And what we want to talk to you about tonight, I think, deserves the undivided attention of the audience. And I wanted to go through those little attention getters, if you will, from a very personal basis, because I personally experienced them. They were real. And Greta is one of the most unusual people on this planet. And she has a story that needs to be told. And it is worthy of your deepest attention. And we want to get into that with you now on Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. We'll be back in just a moment. Greta and Dick Smolo, they're man and wife. They sit back there with two different names. I've always wondered about that. Why isn't it Greta Smolo?
Well, when I first went into business, Bill, I used the name Woodrue so that I would not be connected to Dick in any way, since we were in similar businesses.
Well, he made those funny little dresses for children.
I'm sorry.
He made those funny little clothes for children.
That's right. And I was in the market buying funny little clothes for children for 92 stores.
Oh, I see.
And they would say, oh, my goodness, you can't buy those dresses. He'll copy them. He was a manufacturer.
Mm.
And I'd say, no, it's not connected. And that's how the name Woodrow was born. Then when I wrote the book On a Slide of Light, I had four children in college at that time, and I was writing about a way-out subject, and I didn't want any fallout on them, although they were very unhappy that I didn't use my right name. But it's been a professional name for many, many years for me.
Well, I kind of love it. It makes you both sound naughty.
I'll tell you, it's very naughty when we check into a hotel.
Yes. And you're the naughtiest people.
That's right.
You really are. What amazes me, and what I think gives you so much validity, Greta, is you and Dick were both in the absolute heart of the establishment, okay?
No question.
No question about that. You were deeply entrenched in that in New York, in the garment industry, and in the executive search industry. And all at once, an experience started happening to you that was bigger than that. You were both very, very successful people. And you then took a path into the New Age, which was not fashionable at that time, and I can't say it's even fashionable now. But it was so compelling and so overwhelming what was happening to you and the information that you were getting. What was happening, and let me aside now tell the audience that the psychic ability of Greta allowed her to become a channel. And she started channeling information. And as you know, channeling is getting information that comes from a source other than your own consciousness. Information that you could not possibly have yourself. To channel is, as we're finding out now, not that unusual. But the degree and the quality of the channeling is something to be studied, which Alan Vaughn and a lot of people are doing. And there are degrees in that. And people channel from very different sources. Some channel from the high self, I suppose. Some channel from spiritual beings. And in Greta's case, the channeling of, was identified to her as members of an alien group known as the Ogatans. The Ogatans had some very fearful kind of things to tell us in A Slide of Light. They were telling us that we could change the course of events that are destined for us, but pragmatically we would not change them. And therefore we were destined for a time of a lot of disaster in a way.
Well, let's say great adjustment.
All right, great adjustment. I was going to paraphrase that just a little bit. We may look upon it as a disaster or a purging, but there would be great changes that would come over the earth, not only in its geology, but also in, I think, the way man thinks, as he viewed cataclysm and had a chance then to take a look at where he stood and what he was seeing and what he stood for. And what he thought were the great prerogatives in life. I often am recalled when I read On a Slide of Light and what the Ogatans were saying, my neighbors in Granada Hills, and on February of 1971, when one day, in 1 minute, they saw all of the things that they had worked for all of their lives come tumbling down in an earthquake on February 9th, 6 o'clock in the morning. And they wondered then about their prerogatives in life. Because they were all now a rubble on the ground. But life didn't stop for them. And in a sense, this is what we're hearing from the Ogatan people. Now, the last we talked, Greta, which was 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot of gloom and doom in what you had to say, although you certainly tried to couch it as best you can, and out of the change comes goodness, you know, out of the volcano comes new life, as is this the way with the great storm comes new life.
Yes.
And when you were saying those things, you were looking into the future and you didn't have any great facts to deal with as reality.
Well, I'm afraid that a good part of our scenario is now on the front pages of every newspaper in the country.
Well, you know, I read the Greta, the Woodrow update every day, every time it comes. Once a month, something like
every
that?
Every other month,
every other month it's there. And you have been cataloging the changes that you were talking about in the sleight of light and other things that you have since. You know, that's not the end of the revelation that you have for us.
Not at all.
And those things that you were talking about then, how much of them have become reality now?
Well, since that first glimpse of the scenario, which was back in 76, the geological and human activity on the planet has done nothing but support the message of change. I mean, so much has happened since we were together and since I was shown this scenario. Last year, Bill, I lectured, for example, in beautiful Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And there, etched against these gorgeous mountains we were skiing, we could see a layer of pollution. You go to lovely Alaska. Every winter, millions of square miles, you know, in the Arctic, are blanketed in pollution.
Well, do you know why that's blanketed in pollution up in Alaska?
Oh, yes. In fact, in Antarctica, the penguins, you know, had DDT enter into the food chain and they all died. Pollution everywhere.
Well, you know, Alaska, that just rings a bell with me. Every night at Gull Island in Alaska, they started at 2 in the morning and it runs until about 6 in the morning. They burn 190 million cubic yards or cubic feet of natural gas.
Oh, my.
That's just at Gull Island in Alaska. At Woodrow River, they burn more than that.
Well, pollution is a tremendous problem. You see, all nations export their pollution. We saw the dying forests in Germany and Czechoslovakia and Poland and...
The Black Forest.
Pollution killed them.
The Black Forest, the magnificent Black Forest of Germany...
Oh, indeed.
...is going.
And now, you know, the governments are all trying to save what has not been destroyed, and they're trying to regenerate what died. I remember 5, 6, maybe 8 years ago, we were writing about a thing called the greenhouse effect.
Mm-hmm.
And very few except the scientists were looking at this. Now the whole world is worried about this increase in the atmosphere of carbon dioxide. Now, let me tell you something. It's supposed to make the climate warmer, right? Worldwide, because that heat, you know, is trapped, not allowed to escape.
Terrific.
All right. It's the forests that man is destroying that control this carbon dioxide. It takes the excess out of the air. We talked about this years ago, and I'm here to tell you that we don't agree with the common view. We do not think it's going to make the world uniformly warmer. It's going to make the weather patterns far more extreme, however. Colds will be colder. Warms will be warmer. Wets will be wetter. Droughts will be drier. Wherever we go, people say to us, oh, it's never been as. And then you can fill it in.
I think the Interior Department reported, I think it was last week, and I can be corrected on this figure, that last year in our national forest, we lost something like 22.5 million trees to pollution.
I don't doubt it. And with that, of course, you have to watch your water levels, too. It's a think and relate thing, you know. You can move on to other stepped-up activity, the earthquakes, the volcanic activity. Just in these last few years, first half of the 80s, what did we have? We had Mount St. Helens, El Chacon, Alaznan, in Turkey, in Italy, just here. This year in September, you know, of course, what happened with the Mexico City earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
October, the Soviet Union, worst reported in several decades, took a whole Central Asia town out. Mudslides, Colombia, triggered by the, volcanic explosions of Nevado del Ruiz, another ring of fire volcano.
Mm-hmm.
You've got hurricanes that are setting absolute records all over the United States.
Would you believe that we had snow in the San Fernando Valley last week?
Oh, I believe it. You want to know that the snow cover set a record for November in North America, Europe, and Asia. North America had 6 million square miles of snow. And in Europe, of course, it was even worse. It was 9-something 9.2, I think, million square miles in Europe, breaking all the records.
We're kind of keeping a track on another thing, Greta. In the last 2 years, and the count goes back almost 2 years now, there have been over 1,500 weather-related deaths in the United States.
Yes.
No time in history in this country have people died because of weather at the rate that they're dying now in the United States of America.
Well, there's no question that all of the weather cycles are coming together in this period, and it's just become a crashing crescendo. It's happening.
Well, now. I think we have a little help about the weather in the United States. We have a little technological help that's going on. But,
I certainly hope so.
Well, I'm sorry it's going on because it's coming from the Soviet Union.
Oh, my goodness.
I haven't given you that briefing, have I?
No, you have not. And I'd be very interested, Bill.
I'll give you that. I gave it to the world in the Let's Talk magazine and, of course, a couple of shows with a friend of yours and mine, Tom Bearden, on the air.
Ah.
That's the scenario of Tom. We're familiar with it, Bill.
The crossed scalar beams.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, I think that the major difference between the time Greta wrote On a Slide of Light in the middle 70s and today is that she was a voice, a solo voice, or almost a solo voice at that time, trying to alert as many people as possible to the possible changes in weather and in geological components. Today, the outfits like the Cox newspapers are running on their front pages 7 or 8 day studies of what the changes are. And everybody, all of your listeners, are familiar with the possibilities within their area and are aware of what is happening around the world. So I think what has happened is that On a Slide of Light, which was predictive and possibly considered doom and gloom at an earlier period, is just predictive and, unfortunately, accurate.
Well, that's the interesting thing, Dick, is that On a Slide of Light has been accurate to a fault. Uncanny in its accuracy.
You know, it's funny. We moved here to the beautiful mountains of North Carolina, so we were not part of the recent spate of tornadoes that hit the state. But be aware that right here, it was the worst natural disaster that we've had in 100 years. That group of tornadoes that hit. And in the three counties, you know, all around our home, they were devastated last year, right at this time, by a freeze that saw readings dip into the minus 20s. This is in the southeast.
Yes, that was a part of... it was an interesting scenario. It actually started on December 12th,
uh-huh.
So it was a little bit later, that the jet stream did an amazing thing. Right above San Francisco, where it usually discourses across the northern part of the United States, it did a 90-degree turn and came down the Southern California coast.
Mm-hmm.
It did another 90-degree turn just south of Los Angeles, which then sent it across Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, and up the Adirondack chain, which sucked in, of course, all of the cold Arctic air from the north, at the same time mixed it in beautifully with the warm Pacific air from the Pacific, the Southern Pacific area.
Well, there's no question that we are getting supermagnetic storms and floods and tidal waves and all of these terrible things. Of course, Mother Nature is no mother. She can be a tyrant.
Well, Mother Nature didn't change those jet streams 90 degrees, Greta, is what I'm telling you.
No, this is true.
They had a lot of help from the Hammer and Sickle Boys.
Well.
But nevertheless, maybe it's a part of the scenario.
Well. The question is, what about man's role in the scenario? You know, there are still over 40 armed conflicts going on around the globe.
38, I think. 38 conflicts at last count. That's not counting the conflicts on Madison Avenue.
No,
and in downtown Los Angeles and Atlanta and Dallas and San Francisco, where man's inhumanity to man in the boardrooms and in the sales rooms of our great business world is as intense as it is on the battlefield.
Well, our country makes more and more arms and weapon systems to help destroy the planet and everything on it. I look at certain statistics and I'm horrified. 30 children die every minute for want of food and inexpensive vaccines, for example. And yet the world's military just keeps spending, well, it's $1.3 million on weapons for that same minute. Can you believe that? And the imbalances just go on and on and on. So it does not appear to me.
When you spend more money to kill than you do to live,
yes,
you're obviously going to die.
Well,
that seems to be the way the scales are weighted, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, I don't see an all-out effort by everyone to rewrite this scenario. And so I'm afraid that I, you know, 7-8 years later, have to very sadly agree with the latest word from the Ogata group that everything is right on target.
You know, we've gotten off track here a little bit. You've got to come out so we can sit and talk all day long.
I know.
We've gotten off a little track because we're talking about the Ogata group. I want to take a little break.
Oh, right.
And I want you, when we come back, to talk about the Ogatans, who they are. Talking about the Ogatans. Who are the Ogatans, Greta?
Well...